Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
The views expressed here within the programs and chats do not necessarily represent the views of LiveParanormal.com.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com. The only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interactive Media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and you're
listening to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Brigati on LiveParanormal.com.
Of My Darkest Hour Radio. I'm your host, Stefan Brigati, and thank you for joining me on this great Thursday evening, June 18th, 2020. A lot of crazy things going on out there in the world. I know everyone's pretty safe, you know, adjusting back to some type of normality is a little bit, you know. We've been kind of locked down for a while, and people are just starting to get their feet wet and getting back out there. So I hope you guys are safe. One of the things I've been talking about for the past few weeks, as far as paranormal investigation goes, people that have been locked down at home have a great chance to really do review of their evidence, you know, watching the DVRs and watching those camera footage for hours on end, because it takes a lot of work. And what a great chance to get a jump on that by sitting at home and enjoying yourself by doing some investigative research. So with that being said, you're listening to My Darkest Hour. Right here on LiveParanormal.com and History FM Radio. A lot of people ask me, where else can they find us? We're on Speaker.com, iTunes, a few more places that we're going to be branching out to, including a couple of channels, so you can actually get the live feed and the videos that we'll be putting up for My Darkest Hour as well. So moving on, tonight my guest is Gene Nelson. Mark Christopher Nelson and Barbara Nelson, who work together as a team. A lot of you have heard them on the show before, longtime friends. I even investigate with them on my paranormal team when we have to get out there and do some stuff. So it's been great working with both of them. And Mark has one type of psychic abilities and Barbara has another. So they kind of complement each other out there in the field. I've seen it. It works great. Mark is known for psychometry a lot of people have seen him at some of the Paracons, some of the events that we do, and he touches things. He can tell you a lot about it. He's clairvoyant. He has the ability to clairaudience. So he's hearing voices as well, and clairsentient ability. So we're going to get him on and find out what's been going on. You've seen them on Ghost Adventures and lots of other paranormal shows, of course, Haunted History. We're going to find out a little bit more about that stuff, so I don't want to give too much away. Mark has had his own TV show on Fox. So we'll find out about more of that. And what's in the future for them coming up? So let's go ahead and bring them on the show. Mark,
hey,
hi, are you out there? Hey, buddy, how are you?
Sure.
Good. Hi, Stefan.
Hey, Stefan. Good to hear your voice, buddy.
Yeah, you too. You know, it's been a while. I'm glad that we can finally catch up a little bit. And now that things are hopefully getting back to normal, we can start helping people again and start doing some investigative work, which I miss quite a bit.
Me too.
We did too.
That, and just for everybody, I mean, Stefan, I've had the opportunity to work on a couple of shows and get out and do investigating with a number of people, but I think the world of Stefan, he knows what he's doing. He's credible. He's calm. He knows how to just enough to, like, can we get these ghosts to do something, people in spirit? Are we going to get them to, you know, just how to kind of goose them into doing things? And I love that.
Man, you're too nice. I appreciate that, the kind words. But it's really about, when I go to an investigation, I think about this poor ghost. He's been here for so long, and how many people have come in and done the same thing and asked the same questions? Like, if it was me and I saw them coming in, I would just go and hang outside until they left, you know? I mean, what's the point? But I just want to have fun. I want them to know that we're different. We're trying to help. If they want us just to come visit, we want to have some fun with them, you know, whatever it takes to get them to loosen up and interact with us, you know?
Yep, absolutely. Well, if you consider them to be conscious beings, conscious spirits, they're going to have, you know, their own values, their own sense of what they want. They're going to probably have a very different view of what the world looks like from being on the other side, not being on the physical. They're going to see things differently.
Absolutely. And sometimes they're looking at a different time and space. And then we're staring at them and they're just looking at us going, what is going on here, you know? And when we pass out all this equipment saying, hey, can you touch this thing? There's no way you can touch this thing, you know, especially like if they're a spirit from Victorian times. They're like, what is that?
Yeah. It's like, you know, me saying, hey, Stefan, will you touch the small glowing spaceship that is whirling around your head for me? It's like, what? No.
Yeah, absolutely. So it takes a little bit of coaxing and to try to show them that it's all good and fun and games. So how you guys been? It's been a while.
Good.
It's been too long. Well, Barbara and I have tried to stay busy. I got to tell you, we had, you know, you were saying it's kind of hard to get out and do investigating right now. It truly is. But Barbara and I were at home one night, and we had something happen to us in the house that kind of like it was connected to an investigation that we had done before. And so something came up on TV. We were on YouTube or something. And Jay Sebring, we saw an episode of Jay Sebring.
We were watching on YouTube. Remember that show, What's My Line or something, where you had to guess who was the real whatever, you know? And so they had three guests, and one of them was Jay Sebring. And you had to guess which one was the hairdresser. And, you know, at the time, nobody knew, you know, who he was. Or, you know, just celebrities. But anyway, so we were watching it. And then we remembered how Mark had gotten a message at David Oman's house about J.C. Brown. What?
Oh, yeah, we were at the house.
Yes.
I heard Jay Sebring say, I had big plans, and then people recording at the time, the TV crew, also, they recorded me saying that, and then they played it back and heard
another voice
saying, I had big plans, so they could tell one was me.
So anyway, we
we remembered that bit that Mark had heard that, and I'm sitting in the chair in our living room. We're watching this thing on JC Bring, and my phone is like, I'm not even touching it, and it's sitting on the chair, just the arm of the chair. And I look to Mark, and I go, yeah, you remember when you said I had big plans, that he had said that? And I said, I bet you he really said that. And then my phone went into Siri mode. It just flashed into Siri mode, and it said yes.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know where that came from.
They're like, so the investigation came to see us. So I thought that was pretty trippy, really, you know? So
that was a nice confirmation.
That was a nice confirmation out of the blue. It's like, okay, Jay, now get the hell out of here. You know, no need to follow us home. Thanks for dropping in. But it was kind of funny.
It's one of those things, like, I wonder how many times Jay Sebring has followed you home from David's house, because how many times have we investigated David's house over the past, you know, 10 years or so?
Oh, a whole bunch.
Many times.
Many times.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The house really still hot. I mean, I haven't been there in a while. The last time we were there, we were getting things. But interesting. But so we've been out, Stefan, and to your point, though, I mean, a lot of people may not recognize that things are following them home. You know it probably as well as I do, that it's really important to do a clearing, to kind of clear yourself, to say a prayer, to do protection, a protective prayer, to let these spirits know it's like, you're not welcome here. We don't want you kind of taking up residence at our house. So that's why I was a little surprised about J.C. Sebring. It was hardly like we had been spending a lot of time with him or there, but I mean, apparently they seem to be aware of when we're talking about them.
Yeah.
So,
And they also can use electronics too. That's why, you know, a phone or television, radio, any kind of electronics they can use to get their message across.
Well, one of the things I have noticed over the years is a lot of the theories behind ghosts, and it goes for, when we think about it, it's not really a new theory or anything. Like we say, when our loved ones pass, you just call to them and they come to you. Things like thought projection, focus, amount of energy. So spirits pick up on energy because they're part of the field, that wave of energy that's flowing. So if you put out that thought of Jay Sebring or whatever, even just thinking about something like that, they do pick up on that, and they'll just kind of shoot right over to you and say, hey, what's going on? You know?
Well, I totally agree. We saw it, and it was kind of just like, that is so surprising, because it's not like we all walk around and only talk about Jay Sebring. You know, it's like, that was like a one-off, you know, but his consciousness works differently on the other side. Just does.
It gets stronger. We're bound by physical limitations on this plane. So I think as we separate those bindings into a more of an astral type plane, we have more ability to go where we want to go, see what we want to do, you know, whatever it is. If we can change the way we look from being an old person into being young and the way we feel, then the possibilities are limitless.
I totally agree. I totally agree.
And also, too, there's a scientific reason behind it, too, because once you're connected, we're electrical impulses, and once you're connected to someone, that bond doesn't break, so you're connected forever. It never ends. So
that makes me wonder, too, because actually right before the lockdown, Barbara and I started to do some investigating with, you know him well, Barry Conrad. He
Absolutely.
Wanted to film, you know, Barb and Tom Myrtle.
Two
yep.
very good guys. They work together. Can't say enough about them. Love them. They wanted to do some taping of us. So they went with Barbara. Well, Barbara and Barry and Tom came up with a couple of locations for us to investigate. And I didn't know. They kept me out of the loop. One of them was in Studio City, an outside location. And we went and shot it during the day, which was kind of funny for a paranormal investigation. But they brought me to this little place, in, like a side street in Studio City, near where a bunch of restaurants were. And
we didn't tell Mark what happened there or what event was it. We didn't tell him anything. He had no idea. And we just went down this little side street off of Tahunga, and we walked the street, and then we stopped in this one area, and we just said, Mark, what do you pick up here?
And the first thing I noticed was I see this blonde woman. She's been gone 20 years, 15, 18, something like that. But I see her maybe 18, 19 years, something in the, along the, around, right around the turn, last, you know, beginning of the 21st century, or 21st century. So around 01, something like that, or 02. Anyway, what I saw was this blonde woman. She had like kind of like a halo of kind of light curly hair. She had very big eyes. She kind of looked like an actress. And I kept getting this name Bakley or Brinkley or Barkley. I got Barkley, Brakley. I got Bakley, Barkley, Brinkley, all in that range. And it turns out that, and I said that she had died here and that her husband had arranged for her to be killed at this place. It turns out that, Barb, you want to tell?
So it was really interesting because knowing that Mark didn't know, I knew. And he just kept talking. And the reason Barry and Tom wanted Mark to investigate this was they've always wanted to find out, like, what really happened here? Because this person did get off for the murder.
Well, why don't you tell them who it was?
But anyway, so to get to the bottom of it. And Mark said that this husband did not want to do this himself. So he actually got someone that he knew to do it. And what had happened was they were eating in a restaurant nearby and he had drugged her. So she was already kind of out of it. And then she went back to the car.
Mm-hmm.
They were going back to the car. It was parked quite a ways off the street. I mean, it was unusual for someone to park that far away. But anyway, and then as they get to the car, the husband goes, oh, I forgot my gun.
Or something. Like, I forgot something at the restaurant.
Yeah.
And the guy that we're talking about is Robert Blake.
Robert Blake.
And
so he went back to the restaurant. Bonnie was in the front seat of the car.
That
the
was
passenger.
His wife. That
yeah.
was his wife.
And Mark said that some guy came up to the window. There was
an altercation.
Altercation, although she was out of it anyway because she was drugged. And then he shot her like twice.
I don't know. But there was drugs involved. Her name was... I said she had very prominent big eyes. She was kind of pretty, kind of this, you know, floaty, fluffy, curly hair. And then if you look at Bonnie Lee Blakely, which turned out to be her name, I had Brinkley, Barkley, Bakley. I was all around that. And that's the spot where she had been killed.
So for people that aren't aware of who Robert Blake was, because it was quite a while ago, and I think he's probably in his 80s now, but he had a couple of really good shows. He had
Beretta.
One Beretta where he played a cop, and he had a cockatoo, and very successful.
Long-running TV series.
He was one of the original Our Gang Kids, and you know, had kind of, you know, mixed, he did movies. He was in a very famous Truman Capote.
Oh, yeah.
In Cold Blood or
oh,
whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, big ego and wanted to get rid of her because she just was kind of, for him, it was like she was a noose around his neck, and he just wanted to get rid of her.
And he didn't want to have to divorce her because it would have cost him a lot of money. He was an actor who was definitely on the downside of his career, and so the idea of giving up all of that money became kind of an issue for him. So
well,
we did that work.
We're only married for like less than a year, so that's interesting how it went that out of control so fast.
Yeah. Well, if you use enough drugs, all kinds of things are possible.
Oh, I guess so. That's correct. I think about that.
She also had kind of a not so great background. I mean, she was kind of starstruck. She hung out with several other celebrities, you know.
I think she was a bit of a party girl.
Party girl, you know. But really, that doesn't give someone the right to have you murdered.
No. So
but
he ended up not being found guilty.
No. And it was funny how Mark described the husband. I don't know if you got his name, but...
No, but I...
He described him to a T because he just said he didn't want to get his hands dirty, but he knew he needed to get rid of her. So,
yeah.
And
wow.
Kind of an egomaniac, and, you know, he got off, and he knew how to charm the courts, and they really couldn't find anything to connect him. And they investigated one of his friends and found there was no evidence. I mean, they did a clean job, but I guess he had connections with some unsavory people, and they kind of took care of it for him.
Oh,
so,
sure.
It's great. Yeah. So it was a crazy thing.
So that was kind of interesting.
Barb and I also then, I've always had kind of an interest in reincarnation, because when I'm doing readings, I've always thought about, you know, where are people are in spirit are speaking to me? And so where are they when they're speaking to me? I mean, so many of us have like, you know, are they, I mean, I was raised Catholic. The idea is like, you know, where, you know, you're in heaven or you're in hell or you're here. And so I now recognize that you can be in between, which is that, you know, you can come back if you decide that it's important and that you want to. So I read this book called The Boy Who Knew Too Much, and it took place here in Southern California, closer to you, near Ventura or Thousand Oaks.
Right.
And what had happened is this husband and wife had a little boy, named him Christian, and the father was German. Their marriage kind of broke up, sadly, pretty quickly after he was born. So this little boy was not raised around, I mean, he played, his dad was German, they played tennis and soccer, and that was kind of it. But he was kind of not very actively involved in their life from age two. But then this little boy seemed to get a real interest. He saw some kids playing baseball in the street, wanted to play baseball very much himself, started to follow up, I mean, started to beg for a baseball uniform, then beg for a glove. And he's like two, he can barely talk. So his mom is like, she figures it's harmless, he likes it. He starts to, so she buys him a glove, buys him a few things like that. And then someone gets him a bat, and then all he wants her to do is throw pitches to him. He's a little left-handed two-year-old. You know, he's a lefty batter. But this kid can drill the ball. And he's like, he's got an oddly good swing for a two-year-old. You know, so.
So I think they went on a trip somewhere in New York.
Well, what happened was is that they're out practicing. This guy who was a scout for the Dodgers, or was loosely connected to the Dodgers, was watching them play. They said, "You gotta tape that kid. He's really kind of good." And so she taped it. She put him on YouTube. And then Adam Sandler, the actor, was shooting a movie where he needed to get a
and child prodigy to play his grandson. And so somehow this video got in front of Adam Sandler. They met. They wanted this little boy Christian to come out and play. They flew him out to Boston. They got him. He got a chance to play in front of this Fenway Field, and the kid is like, he's throwing, he's catching. It's like, and he's, you know, he's two. This isn't like seven. It's two.
But he would tell his mom they'd be going up an elevator, and he would just start. And I think he was like, what, 3 years old or four?
Yeah.
And he would say that he was used to being in hotels. He would spend a lot of time in hotels.
And he was big like Dad.
And so he said to her, too, that they used to take a lot. He used to be on a lot of trains.
Not flying. We took trains.
Yeah, we didn't fly. We took trains.
And then somewhere along the way, they went to she had Babe Ruth. They saw a picture.
They went to the Baseball Hall of Fame.
I think it was Baseball Hall of Fame, and they saw a picture of Babe Ruth. And a little kid said, he was mean to me.
And she goes, in the picture, it was the 1929.
I think, the greatest team of all time, Yankees.
Yeah, Yankees. And she goes, where are you in the picture? And he goes, that's me right there. And he points to Lou Gehrig, and he didn't know. He didn't know before that who that was. And then he pointed to Babe Ruth, and he goes, that man was mean to me.
So as a result... He started to tell other details about Lou Gehrig's growing up, and then it's like, well, how did you die? And he said, my body just stopped working because he died of ALS. And so I had a chance to interview, Barbara and I interviewed, we went there. Barbara also took just like kind of like we're shooting, and Barbara took this picture, and there are these orbs like directly on the mom's face that were like,
it was like a series of balls on the mom and the boy, her son.
And this is a very clean environment. But they were like oddly there, not there, but they're right on her face. And they're going, and I forget the question, but there was something about, she was talking about how she too actually believed that she could be the reincarnation of Lou Gehrig's
mother. Yeah.
Because she's, I mean, between the two of them, they were describing, well, the house looked like this. She did a regression. And was able to describe certain things about the mother, the fact that Lou Gehrig's wife or mom at the time had lost, I think, two kids. They had, you know, they lived in a certain kind of house. They described it. And so endless stuff. But the upshot is Barbara and I had a chance to
play catch
with Lou Gehrig.
Yeah. Ask for some pointers.
Oh, believe me, I needed some pointers. But it's funny, if you look up Christian, his name is Christian Bird, and you see how he plays catcher.
He hit the ball.
He hit the ball.
There's a YouTube video, if you look up The Boy Who Knew Too Much.
Yeah, if you look him up.
And Tommy Lasorda actually asked to do this. They had Christian do his regular swing. And then they put it side by side with Lou Gehrig's swing, and it's the exact same swing. Because Lou Gehrig used to dip his shoulder a little bit, and so did Christian. And so it's the exact same swing. They're both lefties, and it's unbelievable.
The funny thing is like people would pay a fortune to have a compact, little power left-handed swing like this kid has. And so since then, he's now, I think, 11, 12. He's become like, you know, one of these touring little leaguers. He plays on teams. He plays on national level teams. He's continuing he really is a baseball phenom. And so it was just really cool having a chance to interview and kind of explore that side of it. I mean, Barbara and I love to do investigating. We like to go and go into places. But this took us a little outside of where we normally go. But it was just very validating, the idea that, you know, life, that consciousness survives the body. It survives the body, and that it can show up in really fascinating ways. And so that again was something that Barry and Tom will have that edited for us sometime soon.
If you think about Lou Gehrig was only, what, 37?
Yeah.
He died really young. But he had a lot of unfinished business.
Yeah.
So why not come back and finish up what he wanted to do?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, he had a rich career, but
yeah.
he didn't have kids. I think that maybe, you know, that might have been something he, I'm speculating. My sense was that was the case. And then with Barry and Tom, we did one last leg. We're going to do some more with them. But they brought us to this Pasadena house, and it was really interesting. Stefan, I have been with you and Barb when we walk in and we both go, that's here.
Right.
There's somebody here. I mean, you just kind of, you have a great nose for it. You call it a great nose. You know what I mean. But like when Barb and I both go in, we go, geez, there's somebody right there. And I started to visualize him as this very vertical, dark streak. Like he was kind of a very narrow, severe looking guy in life. Kind of slender, but kind of dark-haired, dark clothes, maybe just overall dark energy, but he looked like a slash
right.
His energy.
So the story that brought us there was a friend of ours knew the owner of the house, and he had had several incidents where he would, like, put his keys in the same drawer all the time, and, you know, put them in there at night, get up in the morning, you know. And one time he put them in there, and he knew he put them in there, and they were gone. So he looked everywhere, couldn't find them. A year went by, and he opens the drawer, and there's the keys.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he had, you know, stuff. He goes, the spirit would move stuff around. He had an incident where he was renting out the upstairs bedroom, which was the master bedroom, and to these three girls. I think it was a mom and her two daughters and then a friend. Maybe it was four girls. And all of a sudden they had this, like, fly attack up there. There was,
yes.
There was like a ton of flies in like the kitchen area, and he said there were so many flies, you know, they had to get out of there because he said there were so many flies. He went to turn out the light because there were tons of flies, and he goes his hand was covered with flies. So, and he goes it only happened one time when they were staying there, and then it went away. You know, it never happened again. But he has no idea what caused that.
I mean, my first impression was that could be a demonic thing if it's that kind of a energy, but I didn't feel anything like that. Fun. Have you ever experienced or been around something like that?
Well, I've experienced the fly thing, the kind of randomness of small swarms, but not to that extent, you know, not like Amityville Horror extent.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of theories about the flies appearing, and they are on more of a demonic level because they like to take the form of lower beings.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Well, I was kind of a free show. We also ended up, we had the opportunity to work with Patty Negri. I think you know her.
Absolutely love Patty. Absolutely love her. I just showed her the Ventura Theater recently. That was pretty awesome.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
that's
nice.
A cool place, Stefan. You and I.
I have to go there.
Barbara missed it, but we went there that one night.
We'll set something up again. We're a lot of remodeling being done inside since we're closed because of the Corona thing. So it's stirring up a lot of activity, I'm sure.
And
go back in there with a couple of pieces of new equipment I have to see if they want to talk about ideas or if they like the remodels or just kind of interact with them a bit. So I'll let you guys know about that.
Well, we would love that. That would be a blast. But we did a seance with Patty at the house. She and I work in somewhat different styles, but I consider her to be very, very capable and very interesting, and I enjoyed her personally. She's a nice lady, and but truly a pro. So
awesome.
That was a good experience.
You are listening to My Darkest Hour Radio right here on LiveParanormal.com and History FM. My guest tonight, we've been speaking with Mark Christopher Nelson and Barbara Nelson, and wanted to say if you want to learn more about things that Mark does, you can go to MarkNelsonMedium.com, and there's a lot of the resources on there, a lot of media. You can see some of the clips from the shows that he's done. Like we're talking about, you've worked with Ghost Adventures a couple of times.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, let's talk a little bit about when Ghost Adventures asked you to go to the Soudan House, how the experience you had in there.
Oh, my God.
Barbara and I both, that is a place where there really is kind of a heavy negative energy there. The house, what happened was, is I did a show for Haunted History. The producer saw that I can really do what I say I do. He said, can you go, it was a woman actually, she said, can you go check out this house for us? She was with Ghost, I think it was Ghost Hunters the first time.
Ghost Hunters, yeah.
They
said,
we end up, what they do is they'll do a couple of story angles. They wanted to see, you know, they were going to have us. They had like the detective son of the serial killer who was there. He's the author of the Black Dahlia Avenger. And then they filmed like three story angles. And so ours didn't make it onto the air, but they said that we helped validate that we are in fact in the right place. When we walked up to the house, it's off Franklin. And gosh, you know, it's like, Stefan, again, when you walk into a place and you look around and you go, what the hell was this designed for? This is not, I mean, you go to our house, okay, there's a living room. You go to your house, there's a living room. That's the office.
This house, you enter through this kind of huge Mayan temple, but it looks like a big, like, mouth. You're going in this huge...
Hence the Jaws house is the name for it.
Like you're going in a Jaws house. But you're not entering on a normal level. You're entering through the basement. So you come into the basement and you're like, oh, where are we? You know?
Yeah.
And then you find the stairs, you go up the stairs, and then the house is kind of, if you can picture like a big O where all the hallways go around this open air atrium, and there's like a patio, and there's like, I think there's some kind of water feature.
Yeah.
But it's like, if you were disoriented or drugged in that house, those hallways all look the same. So it's like, you wouldn't actually know which side of the house you were on or which direction you were going. Or
literally, there's no front door. There's like four or five different doors, and you have to guess which one did I come up.
Right, right. And just, you know, if you're disoriented or drugged or anything, you'd have a hard time figuring out how to get out. So it was like the perfect house to abduct people and murder them and drug them and, you know.
So Barbara and I, we went up, we did our investigation. And as I walk up, and you know I've done this before with you, I say there's someone out front. I see a guy, he looks like he's in period clothing from like the 1940s.
Yeah, he was pretty well dressed.
He was pretty well dressed, not a big guy. But I realize, I don't even know why, I just know. It's like, oh, you're a doctor. And then he's like being hurt. The spirit's being hostile to me. It's like, get out of here. You don't belong here. We don't want you. I don't want you here. And so then I realize, oh, you're the guy who killed the woman that people talk about. You're a doctor. Okay, and you lived here. Okay, and then I just turned around and ran to the producer. It's like, I didn't want to actually, you know, have someone say, oh, he heard the production staff talking about something. You know, I didn't want anyone to say, it's like, he just overheard this, he knew about it. And so I went to the producers, before anybody says anything, if there was a doctor living in this house at the time of the murder, he's the one who did it. The doctor killed this woman, this black-haired woman, dark-haired woman. And they go, well, that's kind of that. You know, that was it.
So it was part of the confirmation because they weren't sure if they were kind of using me as a bit of a bird dog. They wanted to see, okay, is there something here? Let's see. Let's see if Mark picks up on something. We both did. And then I also heard that, okay, he didn't just kill one woman. He killed quite a few women, and that he drugged them, and that he killed them in the bathroom frequently. What's weird, though, about a house detail is Barbara and I went down into this basement, and where the house, it was situated on Franklin Avenue, like on the east side of Hollywood. It's a noisy street. It's busy. A lot of traffic. You go down into this odd windowless room in the basement that is kind of like, it steps up like a little stage or altar, and then you don't hear any outside noises. And it's like, who builds a soundproof platform in their basement? What is the point of this creep zone?
What was it, 3 feet of concrete?
It had heavily concreted. You couldn't hear it. It was quiet as the dead, as the saying goes.
But the interesting thing is we did the investigation, I think it was on a Friday, and then that Saturday I saw that his son was having a book signing in Santa Monica, and I said, Mark, we got to go meet him because we got to tell him what we found in the house, you know?
Yeah.
And so we met his son, and he flat out said, oh, yeah, my dad did it.
Yeah, he said my dad was responsible for killing a number of women, and that the thing that was kind of...
He was a detective. He was a Los Angeles Police Department detective.
The son.
For like 30 years, and he solved like 90% of his cases, so he was very good at what he did. And so he actually tried to investigate his dad, and he went to get the evidence that he had left.
He had
a box of evidence from this, and he went to get it, and everything was gone.
From the inside, the box was neatly put where it was supposed to be.
Right, but nothing was in it.
Nothing. It had been empty. So.
And he was even surprised. He was like, "Oh my God!"
And I even went to him before he spoke and said, "Hi. We're both working on the same show. That we heard you were going to be here. Can I just say before you say anything about, you know, he was going to talk about the book. I heard that your father killed several women. He used drugs. He was a serial killer. He did do this.
He worked with the Baron.
He worked with a guy called the Baron. That's kind of and I heard the name the Baron. And he said, yes, my dad did have a friend. They called him the Baron. He was some kind of obscure European, you know, aristocracy, but he put on airs and called himself the Baron. I mean, do you have any friends that you refer to as the Baron?
Not yet, but you never know about the future, you know. I have a lot of friends that call themselves strange things, so I'm sure a Baron will be in there somewhere.
Hey, maybe we can call Steve Holt the Baron. What do you think?
I call him Holtenstein.
That's better. I think he takes
equipment and he takes it all apart and then he rebuilds it and tries to make it better and stronger and stuff. He's pretty wild, man, but he's good at it. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, hey, Steve. Love him. So, I can tell you one last thing about this thing. You had mentioned earlier about being careful about what follows you home. Well, Barbara and I went home after going there and we both, it was very unsettling. It was like, there was like a very sticky, nasty,
agitated,
nasty energy to this place. Barb and I got home. We ended up having like one of the worst screamers. Barb and I we'll get sulky and we'll go away from each other. We were like screaming at each other. It's like,
I thought Mark was possessed.
I thought she was possessed. Of course, I was correct. No. But that was so unlike us. You know, we're not, well, you know us.
He definitely followed us home, and he stayed with us for about 3 months.
Well, we had to really, like, say, okay, they're oppressed. It isn't, you know, it isn't the same as being possessed, but oppressed is another phase that, or level of oppression.
He was the epitome of what pure evil, whatever pure love is, this is the exact opposite. It's pure evil, and it was... It was scary because it glommed onto us and it would not go away.
And we really had to kind of like be very focused. It's like, we're not giving in to this. We recognize that there's like an extra a thing happening here that is outside of what we normally, how we normally treat each other.
So we said a lot of prayers.
Did a lot of prayers. And so that was a very creepy, interesting, fascinating, not in a rush to go back there.
I think that he was actually trying to break us up. And because of our strong bond, I think he just gave up. He said, I'm not going to break these people up, so
well,
I'm getting out of here.
We're blessed, Stefan. We've been married since 1985, so you do the math.
So, yeah.
Don't do the math.
I guess I'm 170 years old. I'm really not that old. I married her when I was in the fourth grade. It seemed imprudent at the time, but it kind of worked out.
Well, I think you guys are a great couple, and I love investigating with you guys and just going to just check out some places, you know. It's interesting because everyone's picking up on energies, and it's a good time for everybody involved. Tell us now what's next. I know you've been doing a lot of radio shows, a lot of things you've been doing. So what's next for you guys coming up?
Well, one of the things, Barbara was unable to go, but I had a chance to go do George Norrie's show, Beyond Belief, for Gaia Network. I shot that. Cool. I actually got a chance to fly to Denver, about 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
3 or 4 weeks ago. And so it was the first time I'd been out since all of the coronavirus. It was an interesting flight. Everyone stayed away from each other. But when we went there, it was the first time I'd really just had a chance to be the sole focus of a show. And George Norrie is a great interview. And then what was fun is I did a psychometry. I told him I do this. And so I said, read my watch. And so I grabbed his watch and two things I picked up on. He said that really, I can't wait for the show to come out. Because honest to God, Stefan, it gave me the best testimonial I think I've ever had. But anyway, he basically says, I hear from him and I say that, you know what, behind your house, there's a plumbing problem. And it's going to require you to fix bricks in order to pull out bricks and redo brickwork in order to get this plumbing problem squared away. And he and his producer both turn around and go, all right. So George just went behind his house in St. Louis. He has a home in St. Louis and one in L.A. And the house behind them in St. Louis, the jacuzzi hadn't been used in a while. The bricks were literally sagging. There was a leak. So it's going to require them to fix a plumbing problem, a leaking plumbing situation, and to go and reset a bunch of bricks that were sagging beneath the ground of a wet spot. So that was validating. And then I heard, George, you're going to be negotiating with a New York-based production company, but the show will be filmed in Los Angeles. This is going to be a new venture for you. And he goes, next week, I'm going to be going to New York to, interview. And this company in New York wants to do a new show with me. And it's going to be shot in Los Angeles. So good job. So, but beyond that, it isn't just me kind of like, I'm going to pick your favorite color. It's more like, this is going to be a successful presentation. It's going to go very well. It's going to create a new opportunity for you. You have a lot of work left to do. And so, but this is going to be a fruitful adventure. Please follow up on that. And so I'm pretty excited about that for him. And also, too, I did Coast to Coast with him. That was fun.
That's on your website.
That's on the website, my website, Mark Nelson Medium. I also did a show, Beyond Reality, with J.B. Johnson. It's Jason Hawes from Ghost Hunters is on it as well. And great guy. We had fun. We were talking about how it's not easy getting a haircut these days during the pandemic. So that was a point of that we discussed. And just how, I came around to doing the psychic work. And so Barbara and I next, where we have a couple of shows right before everything happened. We're kind of set up for a couple of TV show possibilities. As you mentioned earlier, I do the psychometry.
And Barbara is my partner in crime for so much of this. So I'm waiting to hear once the production goes. I've been in touch with this one company. I mean, it's like everybody in our field at one point or another has been approached, but you've been connected. You've had close calls where something's going to happen. So it's hard for me to almost get excited about it. This one feels good because it's a legitimate company. They've been in touch with it's all crap until something happens. Oh, one other funny thing, though, from doing this show is that we met this. All right. You know how spirit can.
Quinky dink.
I called that a quinky dink. Barb and I are standing behind this woman in line. We went to see a show at the Reagan Library. And we started talking to this lady. She showed up on her own. We started talking, and then she says, well, if you look me up, you're going to find this, this, and this. And I said, well, if you look me up, you're going to find this, this, and this. And it turns out, she said, I'd love to see you. I went out by the Spahn Ranch where the Manson family used to be located. Once again, Stefan, Barbara and I are both getting pulled into stuff with the Spahn Ranch in Manson. So she says, I was out there, and she was just out hiking with her dog, and she very randomly sees a tuft of kind of
cloth
sticking out of the ground. And she pulls out the cloth. She finds like a
knife.
And she finds a shirt or, no, it was like an old like 60s purse, kind of a handmade silly purse and a sock. And she notices like there's either rust on them and it's like, no, that's blood.
She finds
this purse, she opens the purse, there's a sock. She finds out that there's a finger bone, a bloody knife inside the sock at the Spahn Ranch. That's a happy afternoon. Let's go for a little treasure hunt. What do you say? What do you want to find? I'd like to get a diamond. No, we're going to give you a bloody knife and a finger bone. How about that instead?
Well, supposedly.
Wow. We've been out there a lot, too.
Yeah.
We didn't find
she said that. No. But she says it was, you know, it looks very, very much like 60s period kind of clothes. And.
But the story was that he had killed that Shorty Shea guy, and they had cut his finger off or something. So Mark did psychometry with the object.
And I got murder. Okay. I didn't really know very much about it, but I got, okay, this is murder. There's a guy named Donald connected to this, might have been killed, and I think, or whatever Shorty Shea's. His Christian name wasn't Shorty. He was a big guy. But as it's almost like, hey, we're going to call the fat guy Slim, the Slim guy Fat. You know, it's like genius. No one ever thought of that being funny. But anyway, so I got Shorty Shea's real first name. I got the fact that there was murder involved. I heard that he, you know, put up a hell of a fight and that he was killed and that they tortured him. And so we think it's accurate just based on, you know, where she says, it's like, well, I found it here. It appears to be this certain thing. So it's kind of creepy and interesting, you know. You never know what you're going to find when you hold something that appears to have blood on it.
That's
at least that's
what?
For psychometry for me. Yeah. But what are the chances of me meeting this lady?
When
me and Barbara. When I held the finger, I got the name. I got a tremendous, like a brawl, fight to the death kind of thing that occurred. And I think that he had been kind of overwhelmed, hit his head with a pipe, and they worked him over. And so he was in a weakened state and not fully capable of, you know, defending himself because he was not a small guy. But if you get clubbed in the head with a pipe and get ganged up on and then someone knifes you, your chances of survival are pretty minimal. So that was an interesting little extra curricular thing. And then, anyway, the show that, you know, they wanted me to prove that I could do what I do. So they do what they call a proof of concept. And so they brought me in, they had me hold, like they brought in this creepy doll that was like
another creepy doll.
Who doesn't want to see more creepy dolls? Stefan. Have you seen enough creepy dolls in your life, or do you want to see a couple more?
I've seen a lot of them, man, and I have a couple myself, so I'm good.
You're all full up on creepy dolls. Well, I got a chance to hold another creepy doll, and then I got this kind of like little angelic, like a pendant to hold. And I got, okay, this is from your mom.
This has to do with your mom winning this as a it was given to her in recognition of a successful thing. It wasn't just a gift. It was a recognition, a reward, an award of some kind. And that proved to be accurate, and then I got other things about the mom. And so they were sufficiently, I proved the concept, so to speak. So we'll see if anything comes from that. If it does, you'll be among the very first that I tell. And we're waiting to hear if this happens. You know, the TV production is going to start heating up again soon, and fingers crossed. Meanwhile, I'm still, I'm working out of the house. I do readings for people by the phone. I'm writing my, I got in advance to write my first book. So I'm really blessed, Stefan. I'm writing a book, doing readings. Barbara's keeping busy. She's going to be back in her world designing for theme parks. She'll be doing the next stuff, maybe for Disney or Universal. We'll see.
That's exciting stuff. I'm glad to hear all that stuff ahead of you, and we'll be looking forward to following up on all of that as well, especially the book. Congratulations on that, and it'll be great to
check
it out. Yeah. Well, you guys, we are at the end of the show, so we're going to have to go. Everybody, you have been listening to My Darkest Hour. My guests tonight have been Marcus Vernelson and Barbara Nelson. We've been catching up on some stuff and hearing about some of their intense experiences out there. Absolutely. You can find out more about Mark at marknelsonmedium.com and kind of keep up with the updates. And I look forward to spending some time with you guys soon.
I would like that, Stefan. It's been too long. We always have a blast with you. And you've managed to get us into some way cool places.
Yeah.
So hats off to you.
Well, I'll continue to do that. So thank you guys for spending some time with us. And I'm looking forward to catching up, like I just said. So let's just keep things going. And we'll talk soon.
Not soon enough. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All right, buddy. Good night. And that's going to be it for the show. You're listening to My Darkest Hour Radio. I have been your host, Stefan Bergotti. Thank you for spending some time with us tonight. I want to give a shout-out to our sponsors, Chili Man Salsa Company, Regal Morales, making some of the best flavorful salsas I've ever had. And you can tell they're paranormally hot by the ghost on the label. I also want to give a shout-out to Lizzie Wizzy's Crafty Creations, making the clothing and all the stuff we need to protect ourselves on some of those cold nights as we're stumbling through the dark asylums in the cold. And I also want to give a shout out to another one of our sponsors, Mike Murray, and everybody at Paranormal Technologies, or we call them P-Tech, making all the lights and all the great stuff that we use on our investigations, keeping us from bumping around in the dark so we can see. So everybody, you guys have a great week. Thanks to everybody out there at LiveParanormal.com, History FM, everybody, iTunes, and of course, Blog Talk Radio for keeping things organized for us. And we will see you guys soon. So if you're going to go out this weekend, please practice safely. So good night, y'all.
This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and you're
you are listening to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Bergotti on LiveParanormal.com.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.